Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.
All right, time for us to move on to our next segment. It's 25 minutes before 1. It's time for us to get into our Ask a Pastor segment. Remember, this segment is meant and dedicated to you as a listener, as an individual Christian who has your own questions about our faith and our beliefs and our text, from whence we get our beliefs. I beg your pardon. All right, so our question for today is, are mega churches diluting the message of faith by focusing on entertainment? Are mega churches diluting the message of faith by focusing on entertainment? A bit of context here. I'm an elder at Calvin on Ethel Seventh-day Adventist Church. We had a pastor come to our church visiting, didn't know much about Calvin. He was just visiting with his family. And they arrived fairly early. I think around 9. At Calvin, we have church starting at 10. And they thought church was not happening. So because I was there with the deacons preparing for the church to start at 10, I welcomed them. And they asked, are we having church today? And I told them, no, we are having church. Calvin starts church at 10. And the wife asked, so how big is your church? And I said, no, actually, it's a fairly small church. We're a very small church. We're a family church. We're not a big church at all. And then she asked, oh, how many people, how many members do you have? I told her, we have members, 380 members. Yeah, give or take 380 members, but people who attend are in excess of 400, 450 every Sabbath. And she was shocked. How do you call that a small church? And I was shocked that she was shocked, because I've seen churches who have an excess of over a thousand members, and in excess of 4,000 attendants in that building. So comparatively speaking, Calvin is a baby church compared to the churches that I've seen here in Africa, here in sub-Saharan Africa. When you go about 6-7 kilometers from Calvin, you're going to find Santon. Santon has a big church, a humongous church. So, mega church, I'm not quite sure what the person refers to as a mega church. Would Santon be a mega church? Is Calvin on Ethel a mega church? Are those churches that I know that are 1,000 members and more mega churches? What's your definition of a mega church? And also, what do you mean by entertainment? Huh? What do you mean by entertainment? Because I would assume that we ought to go to church and enjoy ourselves. What do you mean by that? That was my question when I was going through and preparing for today, but I thought we have a pastor who is going to be giving the answer, so let's let the pastor give the answer, his interpretation of the question and his answer. And that's why we do have Pastor Babuluki Musek joining us on the line to give us some perspective on this. And Mfundisi, good afternoon to you. Welcome, and thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us once again today.
Good afternoon, my elder. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Mfundisi. Our question for today is, are mega churches diluting the message of faith by focusing on entertainment? I'm hoping you heard my intro. I'd like to hear your interpretation of the question, and then you can give us your answer.
All right. There are two elements that I picked from the question. These are the element of the size of a church, and then there's also the element of message of faith versus entertainment. I would say that, the size of a church, whether it's regarded as a mega church or not, I think it's very much relative. It's very much relative. What is a big church for the community may not be so much of a big church, depending on where one comes from. and what they consider to be big. But looking at the essence of the question, really, I wouldn't equate the size of a church to the church not preaching the message of faith and just focusing on entertainment. Again, also entertainment is something that needs more of a clarification from the asker of the question. But when you look at the primary role of the church, or the primary mandate of the church, is to preach the gospel and make disciples. The size of the church does not matter. A big church or a mega church, what one calls a mega church, can preach the gospel effectively, make disciples effectively, and plant other churches. And a church that is small in number can be a church that does not focus on preaching the gospel and focus on maybe entertainment and not making disciples for God's kingdom. So it is not about the size of the church as much. It is about what is it that the church knows as its mandate. Why was it organized in the first place? Do they know the reason for the organization? Do they know their mandate? Do they know the reason of their existence? And if so, then it is to preach the gospel and make disciples. And if they lose that and drift off into other things, regardless of the size, then that is where the problem is. So the issue at the end of the day is the church, regardless of its size, doing what it was organized for, preaching the gospel, being relevant to the society, and making disciples for God's kingdom. That's how I would respond to the question.
Okay. All right. Got it. So, what's your understanding of entertainment, Mfundisi?
Entertainment, the way I understand it from the way the question is asked, it's like entertainment is contrasted with the message of faith. So it's anything to keep people engaged and not help them to see the big picture, which is the gospel, or the message of the gospel. So by working from the context of the question, then contrast of the terms or the phrases there, I just make a deduction from that. I mean, entertainment is a very huge thing. One can say, you know, playing cards, for example, drinking alcohol, for example, dancing, for example, movies, for example. I mean, it's just a big term. It's just an umbrella word that has many elements to it. But I'll just work from the way the question is asked. It's like it's contrasted with the message of faith. So it's like anything outside of the message of faith that keeps people, that gets people's attention, other than, you know, leading them to Christ, then presume or assume that falls in the realm of entertainment. It needed more clarity from the asker of the question to, you know, clarify what they mean by entertainment. But by contrast, I can make that deduction.
So I'm reading it from the Merriam-Webster dictionary, the definition of the noun entertainment. It is defined in a variety of ways, one of which is amusement or diversion provided especially by performers. Something diverting or engaging, such as a public performance, a usually light comic or adventure novel. And the other definition is the act of entertaining, and so forth. Are these definitions defining anything closely resembling worship? Could there be anyone who could be entertained by worship?
When you read a diversion, and then we do a diversion, it's like someone's been diverted, or the attention is being diverted from that which is important to something that is maybe of less importance. I don't know if we can still call it worship if it diverts people's attention and focus from God, because worship is something that should be given to God.
Right.
So I think if then with that understanding, with that definition, then if a church is there to divert people from pay attention to God and his message and the gospel and being part of God's kingdom.
Right.
Regardless of the time, it's wrong. whether it's a big church or a small church, whether it's a mega church or a micro church, is wrong. But
So,
what I think that that big churches, churches that I regard as big, even here in Botswana, that preach the gospel, that lead people to God's kingdom, that plant churches, other churches around them in their vicinity. So I really don't attribute the size to diluting the message of faith.
So we have a very popular verse. I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Is that person possibly referring to them being entertained? That state of being glad, would that not be perhaps as a result of them being entertained?
When he says, I was glad when they said unto me, let us go unto the house of the Lord, it's like the person is rejoicing. There is joy in the house of the Lord.
Right.
So I don't see joy as something that is wrong. I mean, looking at, I like the definition from the dictionary, a diversion. I don't think that singing to God and showing joy that you are praising the Lord is a wrong thing. It's not a wrong thing. What the Bible says that people do, I mean, that verse there, there's also another one, enter his gates with thanksgiving and be joyful as you enter his gates. I think that's Psalm 100. So you see that there's joy in the house of the Lord. It's not like, you know, the house of the Lord, when you go to it, they should be mourning and our heads are cast down and we look gloomy and all. So we should be joyful. Why? Because he is our Father. He redeemed us. He created us. And he gives us things that we need in life. And beyond that, he offers us eternal life. And that is something that is worth being joyful for and being happy for.
2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 14, chronicles an event which many people find objectionable, including David's wife. It reads, and David danced before the Lord with all his might, wearing a priestly garment. So David and all the people of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouts of joy and the blowing of ram's horns. Surely that was entertainment, and David was demonstrating being entertained, isn't it?
I'll still go back to the definition.
Okay.
Where is the diversion in that? I don't see any diversion from worshiping the Lord and attributing to God the glory.
Well, his this wife saw it.
His wife saw it. I think it's a matter of interpretation. I mean, I can easily say that when someone who's praising the Lord, then they are doing something wrong because of maybe prejudice or because of, you know, my narrow-mindedness. But when we look at the context even of what has happened, this was the ark being returned to Israel, and he expressed joy that finally the ark has come back to Israel where it belongs. And you know, I don't think that is a wrong thing, really, looking at the context, the immediate context, looking at what was happening then. And this woman, she just said, you know what, you were dancing. Yeah, the king was dancing in front of all the damsels of Israel. I think this, you know, I think it is the language of a bitter person who is probably prejudiced, narrow-minded.
So what we are talking about, beloved, is found in the book of 2 Samuel chapter 6. I'm reading it from verse 16. But as the ark of the Lord entered the city of David, Michal, the daughter of Saul, who was the wife to David, looked down from her window. When she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she was filled with contempt for him. They brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the special tent David had prepared for it. And David sacrificed burnt offerings and peace offerings to the Lord. When he had finished his sacrifices, David blessed the people in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies. Then he gave to every Israelite man and woman in the crowd a loaf of bread, a cake of dates, and a cake of raisins. Then all the people returned to their homes. When David returned home to bless his own family, Michal, the daughter of Saul, his wife, came out to meet him. She said in disgust, "How distinguished the king of Israel looked today, shamelessly exposing himself to the servant girls like any vulgar person might do." David retorted to Michal, "I was dancing before the Lord, who chose me above your father and all his family. He appointed me as a leader of Israel, the people of the Lord, so I celebrate before the Lord. Yes, I am willing to look even more foolish than this, even to be humiliated in my own eyes. But those servant girls you mentioned will indeed think I am distinguished." Close quote. So do you imagine this record by Samuel is a misrepresentation, perhaps? Because here, David is conceding that his conduct was less than admirable, even though he believes they will respect him and think of him distinguished because he was doing it for a good reason. Was he not entertained? And that entertainment is evidently seen by his wife, Michal.
Was he not entertained? What was he diverted? What was the diversion? What was he being diverted from?
According to Michal, according to Michal, that was nothing close to being a servant of the Lord. According to Michal, he was being less than. He was detracting attention from the honor and respect and dignity of the procession to that of a person who's exposing himself before servant girls. So according to her, it had nothing to do, it was less than fitting of a servant of the Lord. According to David, it was fitting. According to Michal, it was not. So who are we going to listen to?
And then the response there that he gives to the wife is that, you know, God has chosen me above your father.
Right,
so
just
in that, you can just see it's implied, though. It's implied that it's like she was holding some grudge against that. And also, when you look at that, the Bible says about David, or what God says about David, is that this is a man after his own heart.
Mm.
So I think we'll take the testimony of the Lord above the testimony of...
Well, the Lord doesn't speak here for this. The Lord doesn't speak here. It is the king and the queen having a domestic argument about what is holy and what is not, what is dignified and what is not. So how are we going to choose? Perhaps if I can, with respect to when suggest that this is David the adulterer, David the murderer, the one God who thought he would never qualify to build a church for him. So really, I don't think he's better than Michal.
Okay. You were saying that, you know, focusing on that. Is the issue of the two of them, one has a different view, the other one has a different view.
Correct, yes.
All right. And now you want me to be judge as to who we should believe.
Well, you seem to have judged already for this. I just need you to help us understand how you arrived at your judgment.
Well, as I said earlier on, that at the end of the day, what you see is that one perceives it the other way and the other perceives it the other way.
Correct, yes.
But when you look at the text that you referenced earlier on, was clear when they said unto me, let us go unto the house of the Lord.
Right.
I think that's also the Psalm. Psalm 100, enter his gates with joy and with thanksgiving.
Right, right,
right. So you have this rhythm or this tone in the scriptures that gives this idea that coming into God's presence should not be marked by gloominess, but by joy, and expressing that joy. So what I see David doing there is expressing joy that the ark of the Lord has returned unto Jerusalem. Now, what his wife said, she views it differently. Yeah. She says, look, what you're doing is actually beneath your dignity.
Mm.
And David says, look, I'm willing to even be looked down upon if what I do is for the Lord. So I think there is the issue of what is David's relationship with the Lord and his relationship with God. From what he says is that it is what led him to even do something that his wife would seem to be beneath his dignity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So I think it's more of a personal relationship, a personal faith in God.
And
how one expresses it at the end of the day.
Got it. Loud and clear. Yes, I hear you. Thank you very much. Forgive me for keeping you longer than the time. Thank you very much for your time, nonetheless, Mfundis.
Thank you. Thank you, my Allah. Have a blessed day.
And right back at you, Mfundis.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.